Those in the public gallery and to those who are watching the live stream at home via YouTube. It is 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. In accordance with council's policy, I will ask Mr. Spee to confirm that the audio recording has commenced.
Confirmed, Acting Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge the Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Attendees tonight, we have Acting Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, and Councillor Richardson. From the staff, we have Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Breen, Director of Engineering Services, Mr. Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr. Smee, Manager of Finance, Mr. Jones, Manager Development Services, Ms. Tyler Moore, Media and Communications Advisor, Ms. Adams, Communications and Engagement Support Officer, Ms. Klein. We will also have our consultant planner in attendance possibly later on this evening, but that is to be confirmed. The apologies for tonight are Mayor, Councillor Reet, Councillor and Councillor Street, who have approved leave of absence. Confirmation of minutes. That the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 21 held on the 7th of November 2022 be confirmed as a true record. I have a mover in Councillor Fox. Do I have a seconder for that, please? Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. And no. The motion is carried. Workshops held since last council meeting. On the 14th of November, we had a workshop on the draft local provision schedule. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor or staff have an interest they would like to declare? Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, I have an interest in item 17.4, but I'll be remaining in the room to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, and I would like to declare that I have an interest in item 22.1, which will be held in closed session. Turning now to page 2, transfer of agenda items. Is there an item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session?
Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor. If it pleases the council, I'd like us to consider moving 13.1 amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to update the incorporated documents into closed session.
I will just get some advice on that. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, we would need the reasoning as to why it's justified to go into closed.
Thanks. So I received some advice and potentially I'm hoping that maybe the Manager Development Services might like to speak to this regarding, I guess, risks referred to that would be best talked about. Regarding the incorporated documents, there might be some risks that are best talked about in closed session, but maybe I've misinterpreted an email.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the advice was more about the background to that. I don't believe that the report itself needs to move into closed session. I think that should be able to be discussed easily tonight.
Thank you. That's resolved then. I withdraw that. Thank you.
If we're able to stay on track with that particular item and not veer off to some of the background, then it will be okay. Mm-hmm. So, workshops, we've done workshops. Page 2, questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? If you could please just state your name and your suburb for the record.
Professor Michael Rowan, Birches Bay. I have two questions. The first is noting that the council itself is the employer of the staff of the Kingborough Municipal Administration on the enterprise bargain, but under the Tasmanian Work Health and Safety Act 2012, an elected member of a local authority does not in that capacity conduct a business or undertaking. Who carries the responsibility under that act that arises from being a person who conducts a business or undertaking?
Okay, we'll take that question on notice. Thank you.
Okay, I think the answer will probably be the general manager, but I think it's perhaps good to have that clear. The second one is, noting the answer to my question on notice regarding the council conducting an annual governance review and this not being undertaken as it's not a requirement under the Local Government Act 1993, but also considering the finding of the Future of Local Government Review that there is, quote, significant room for improvement in the overall standard of local governance in Tasmania, does Council accept that such reviews are a standard element of good governance practice, and will the Council consider conducting such a review annually? Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I can't speak on behalf of the whole of Council, but certainly from my perspective, yes, I do accept the premise of your question, and Council will consider whether there is a need or requirement to conduct the review as you suggested, but that would be a matter that Council would need to consider.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the gallery?
Hello, Charles Biggins, Leslie Vare. Just have a couple of questions, probably through the General Manager. Initially, regarding Kingborough's bushfire readiness, can you please detail Council's own bushfire mitigation program, budget, hectares of fire breaks maintained, the kilometres of fire trails maintained, the kilometres of rural roadside vegetation cleared to an emergency evacuation standard.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is some detail there that we would need to take on notice. However, I can advise that Council employs a bushfire management officer, and we also have a community resilience officer who works in that space, so it's certainly something that we do take very seriously, but happy to take the questions on notice to provide the detailed statistics that you've asked for.
Further to which, I'm sure Council is aware of the Royal Commission into National Natural Disasters 2020, and the items that related to local council, in particular, the role that local councils can provide in maintaining or upgrading roads, access roads in rural fire-prone areas to an emergency evacuation standard. See City of Hobart's work on Ridgeway Road to facilitate an evacuation path for Fern Tree. Is Council aware of the findings of the Royal Commission, and are they acting on it?
Yes, this means.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, we are aware, and it certainly forms part of our bushfire mitigation planning and processes.
Do you feel that Kingborough's is resourced? Are you well resourced to deal with the fuel mitigation and other items that I just mentioned?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, bearing in mind that responsibility for bushfire mitigation is one that is a role for Council, it's a role for TasFire, and it's a role for private landowners. It's a really broad question to try and answer. Are we sufficiently resourced?
To deal with Council's... Sorry, for interjecting. To deal with Council's own responsibilities, you know, their road size, their Council land, as far as particularly the clearing to the Ridgeway Road example again, to an evacuation standard. It's obvious to everyone that we're, and it's well documented, that we're a high fire-prone area. Evacuation is going to be a critical part of that. Moving forward, it would seem that this is an area that council could work on. Anyway, that's probably more of a statement than a question. My other questions relate to council's biodiversity policy.
We're unable to take questions regarding something that's on the agenda.
Yep, okay.
If you'd like to submit that one to the General Manager or the Acting General Manager, you'd be more than welcome to.
I will do so. I'll put those in writing and they can be questions on notice from next time. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving now to page 2, questions on notice from the public. Just a reminder that if you wish to submit a question on notice, you should send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had 3 questions, the first one relating to culture and performance review of the Kingborough Municipal Administration from Mr Michael Rowan and an officer's response from Penny Hughes. A second one regarding grant funding from Mr Joe Ellis and an officer's response from Sue Sprott. The third relating to landscape conservation zoning from Miss Mel O'Keefe and an officer's response from Adrian Stander. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? I would just like to say that succinct preamble will be much appreciated. We have quite a long meeting ahead of us this evening, and I think that we can all appreciate that succinct preamble is a good thing. So, Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Dean, then Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Richardson.
Thank you, Acting Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. And through you, my first question is about, it's also about bushfire readiness, and so I'd also like to thank Mr Biggins for his question. Mine relates to 10.3. I'm looking at page 7. In a response to a question on notice, our strategic planner mentions that risk modelling cannot be provided to the public as it is the property of TAS Fire and the Parks and Wildlife. It goes on to say, I'm looking at item 4 on page 7 here, the modelling is the property of TAS Fire / Parks and Wildlife and we cannot provide it to the public. And then at the bottom of the page it says the plans are based on the impact of a fire igniting in a specific location and impacting human settlements in the path of the ignition location. So my question is about who... So the fact that TAS Fire and Parks and Wildlife own risk mapping, why does that mean that Kingborough Council and, the more importantly, the residents aren't allowed to know about it or aren't allowed to view it? And are we advocating to get that risk mapping, risk modelling from TFS and publicise it more widely?
I thought it was already online. Is that correct, Ms Tullamore?
Through you, Acting Mayor. The bushfire mapping is not directly in my department. It is so far as the planning scheme goes. So the planning scheme does include bushfire mapping, which is slightly different to the mapping that was referred to in the question. So it was a little sort of unrelated in that sense. It's also available under the Building Act. The documentation, it's up to the decision of the TFS whether they make that available or not. It's not for us to provide it if we haven't been given that permission. And the comments about the risks, there's two elements, as I understand it. There's just the general risk, which is the mapping that we use in the planning scheme and so forth, and then there's other mapping, which they say is higher, but that's because there's a settlement or there's people there. Put people in an area that a bushfire's going to come through, it comes with a higher setting, but it doesn't mean necessarily that it's any more flammable than the other parts of the bush. So insofar as how the questions were asked for the question on notice, the question without notice at the last council meeting, it was slightly related but not, didn't quite connect, and that's what the office is trying to express. So TFS holds the information and they would need to be approached about releasing that.
Thank you. And through you, Acting Mayor, do we ever as a council see the need to advocate to the TFS and Parks to attain that mapping and that modelling in order to share it to the public, or do we as a council deem that that information is not relevant for the public to look at?
Ms Tyler-Moore? Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm sorry I can't answer that because bushfire is not part of my area, my department.
Sure.
Mr Smee?
My understanding is, sorry, through you, Acting Mayor, that our emergency management coordinator works very closely with TasFire, and they are certainly happy to share that mapping at a officer level. So I don't think there's an issue in terms of it being hidden away. And also my understanding is that TasFire and Council through its emergency management response do use that mapping with our work with local communities. So I don't think it's a case that there is secret maps being maintained, and certainly there is a preparedness to use that work in our community resilience for bushfire.
Thank you. That makes sense. And through you, Acting Mayor, my second question, and I guess it's also worth noting that I think there's many different scenarios, so some scenarios may not be pertinent to share with the public, so I do understand and recognise that. My second question is now about climate action, and the question is this: are there any updates regarding Council's role supporting the Kingborough Community Resilience Working Group to promote a safe, sustainable and resilient community through practical planning for risk mitigation, preparedness and recovery? As mentioned on page 24 of the annual report, it said in the annual report that this is ongoing as opposed to on target.
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the reference to ongoing indicates that the work that is being undertaken is continuing over a course of time. So I'm not in a position to provide a specific detail on the actions that have been taken over the past 12 months, and given our Director of Environmental Services is not here, I can't defer to her. So it's probably best we take that question on notice and provide a more detailed response. But the reference to ongoing means that the work is continuing over time and doesn't have a definitive endpoint to it.
Lovely, thank you. My final question on that through you, Acting Mayor, is that I'm aware that there are multiple groups, I'm going to name but a few: Net Zero Channel, CalSCAR, South Channel Ratepayers and Residents, Blackmans Bay Community Association, as I say, multiple community groups who have been recently discussing community resilience, particularly in the face of a changing climate, and those groups have held events on this matter. Is Council concerned about a fragmented approach to community resilience, ipso facto lots of different groups doing lots of different things, or does Council consider this, in fact, the best way forward, that lots of little groups are doing lots of little different things about community resilience?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, given that action in relation to climate change needs to occur very much at a grassroots community level, my personal view is that we're really happy and grateful that community groups are taking that action, and we do have an overall coordinated approach through our community resilience program. So I don't see it as fragmented. I consider it to be, you know, local action for local solutions, and we are fortunate that we have the resources to be able to assist, support and coordinate that through our community resilience officer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next ahead, Councillor Bain. Dean. Sorry, Councillor Dean.
Yeah, look, I just want to follow up on a few questions that were made put on notice by members of the public. The first one to follow up Mr Rowan's question. I note that he's raised the misbalance in female representation amongst senior leadership positions here at Council, but there isn't necessarily anything named up in terms of the response that was given. So is it possible just to find out what the organisation is doing to foster women into leadership positions and hopefully address this misbalance moving forward?
Mr Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, so I'm not quite sure I understood the question. Is it about the gender imbalance on our management team.
Yep.
So that's certainly been an issue that we have been conscious of, and I know the general manager has been very keen to address that issue, but it does take time, and of course we need to recruit on the merit principle, but I can assure you that achieving gender balance is very much a desire of our whole management team, and certainly has been one of the general manager, and is given due consideration in relation to our recruitment processes.
So it's not possible to name up any specific strategies, I suppose, that we have as an organisation to foster women into leadership positions, whether it's mentoring programs or that kind of thing?
So through you, Acting Mayor, we have certainly encouraged our internally, some of our female managers to undertake leadership courses. That's very much been supported and promoted by this organisation. But, I mean, in terms of more public and visible strategies, no, it is a case that whilst we are desiring to have the gender balance on our team, our recruitment is very much entrenched within the merit principle.
Okay, and just to follow up on Mr. Ellis's question regarding the future Drew Point upgrade.
Could you just speak up a little bit louder for the audio, please? Thank you.
To follow up Mr. Ellis's question regarding the future Drew Point upgrade, I'd just like to ask two questions. What input has the Margate community had in the design and development of this upgrade, and what communication has already taken place with the community or is on the cards to inform them of that project now it's going ahead?
Mr. Smead.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So the original Drew Point master plan was formed in 2018, and there was a community consultation process that was undertaken at that time. And more recently, I think it was about 6 months ago, Council published the proposed plan of works that was to go in, which are scheduled for hopefully later in January of 2023. So that plan was published with an invitation for the public to provide comment on, and I know that some members of the public did take the opportunity to contact their urban design officer to provide input.
So is it standard procedure that there will now be some kind of communication to inform community, I suppose, of those upgrades?
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. So once we get a firm date in mind for the works to commence, yes, our communications team would be providing detail in relation to A, what's going in, B, the time frame, and C, the potential impact it's going to have, because bearing in mind that we don't want to close the whole of Drew Point down over the summer period, so the works are going to need to take place while the remainder of the reserve remains open. So, yes, that communication would be standard.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The first question relates to something in the audit panel report on page 270. There's a note on there that the audit panel did a deep dive into climate change, community resilience and the Kingston Park project. I'm wondering if these deep dives will be provided to the new council, please.
Mr. Breen.
Are you through, Acting Mayor? The information is available in the audit panel agenda, which I believe councillors have access to if they choose to, but certainly can provide the deep dive information separately if any councillor would like it.
Great, thank you very much. Second question is regarding Woodbridge Hill Road and Redwood Road speed reduction submission. Could we please have an update on that one, please?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, we're just finalising the submissions now. Hopefully we'll get it off to the Transport Commission next week.
Thank you. At the last meeting, there was an item regarding council committees, and there was one for Cycling South, and normally there's a proxy for Cycling South as an elected person, which I was, but normally there's a proxy to be voted as well, which was only picked up later in the meeting by Cycling South EO. I'm wondering, do we need to do a formal procedure to have a proxy, or could perhaps the vice chair of the cycling committee be appointed if they so wish to?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I think if it's to be a formal appointment by council, there would need to be a council resolution to that effect. So if this is something that was overlooked, I'd suggest that it would need to be brought back to council by means of a report for formal resolution.
And we can do that?
We can do that, certainly.
Could I comment?
Sure.
Through you, Acting Mayor. The Constitution of Cycling South states that any councillor can attend the Cycling South meeting. So the person who's been nominated to attend on council's behalf is usually only one, and they can then ask somebody from council on an informal basis to come. I don't think that has ever been formalised in the history of Cycling South.
Okay, well, it's probably something that we can check up on, and if it needs to come back, we'll bring it back.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Flora. I should have read the more details in that one. The next question about the Kingston bypass duplication plans and study. Noted it went out for community consultation, and there was a lot of interest in regards to links underpass, overpass to Spring Farm. I'm wondering, do we have an update in regards to that consultation and the future for this? I guess the future design, if they're changing it, or any other updates at all, please.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there's no further updates since the last time this question was actually asked, but I'm happy to chase that back up with the consultants there. The last I spoke to them, they were taking the results of that consultation and looking at doing their further detailed design. Obviously, they've got a conceptual design, particularly for the bypass and for the Algona roundabout duplication, but I'm not sure how far down the track they're actually at, but I'm happy to take that on board there and find out, and I can provide that back in the back to the councillors.
Any further questions, Councillor Midgley? No, Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. My question relates to the gravel footpaths and walkways around Margate, particularly the pathway between Margate and Snug. There's been vegetation overgrowth in some places, reducing the width of the track by around 30%. The vegetation is slashed or whippersnipped or mowed, but it's still there, and there's an ever shortening gravel track. So my question is there any plan to remove that vegetation and reinstate the full width of the track?
Mr. Reeve.
Through your Acting Mayor, do you have any specific locations on that? Generally, what actually happens with those ones there, I'd encourage both the public or councillors there just to raise a service request there, and then that can be inspected and dealt with. But it's quite obviously a very long section. So if you had some specifics of that, that's fine. If you don't, I'm quite happy just to send something up to the depot then ask them to do a general inspection, bearing in mind they do have a dedicated maintenance budget for that particular path.
Yeah, well, very specifically, there's a section between in front of Meredith's, and that's getting quite small.
Yeah, I'm happy to put a service request in.
Yeah, sure. Another question, kind of following on from that, the new development along along Jumella Road features a gravel footpath. Given that what we've just spoken about, are there any plans to put maintenance practices in place so that path that also doesn't become overgrown with vegetation? And a second part of that question, is gravel footpaths going to become a feature of road developments, or is that just in certain areas?
Mr. Reeve.
Through Acting Mayor, no, just in certain areas. So councillors may be aware that there's potential for a fairly large development just abutting where that footpath is there. We would imagine as part of that development there Possibly there would be an upgrade to that footpath to take that into account. So at the moment it's, if you like, got more of a rural characteristic, which is where you typically would have gravel footpaths there. But if it became more urbanised, then you'd be looking at potentially concrete footpaths. In terms of the other part of your question, in terms of maintaining any footpaths where wherever they happen to be there, we do have a maintenance program and budgets there to actually allow for that. As I mentioned in the answer to the previous question there, if there are any issues that are raised there, that's what our customer service request area is for.
Any further questions? No, next I had Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I've got two questions. The first is regarding 12.1 in today's agenda and the officer's response to Councillor Gladewright about communicating or explaining changes to the LCZ. Could council, as a potential cost-effective way of letting people know that they may be down-zoned to the LCZ, make that note in their rate statement and then invite the individual to go to the council's landing page on the website and begin a process of self-discovery and education?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the concept of putting in with the rates notice is known as piggybacking on another letter, which is possible. We have considered that and discussed it. It'll depend on the timing of that and if that's going to line up. Obviously, the rate notices are sent out quarterly, as requested if they haven't paid it up front, correct? So there is that possibility. It will depend on the timing of that. There still will be costs associated with the production of the letters, and not all rates notices are sent by mail. That's not to say that they can't be sent electronically, but it would require further work to split those people in and out. So it is a possibility, but I think probably better looked at when we get closer to it.
Thank you for that. My second question, if I may, unless there's anything else, my second question is, does council, and this may be yourself, Ms. Tyler Moore, does council currently provide to residents upon request a document that outlines an almost checklist-style format how to achieve DA approval and the council fee associated for works they wish to accomplish on their property? For example, a document to guide them on approval to build a new home, or maybe an extension to their home, or maybe one for adding a shed or external garage to their property.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, there is a checklist that's provided on the application form, which is available on our website. There's a series of information sheets as well relevant on our website if you would like to look at that. And it's probably worth saying, some people say, why can't you just have a single checklist about if you want to build a shed? There's so much variation from property to property to do with zones and overlay codes, covenants, easements, neighbours, fall of the land. It's very difficult to encapsulate all that in a user-friendly type format, so it has made it difficult, but we do have some overall guidance. And certainly we take a huge number of inquiries from the public, which we've reported on in the Development Services Quarterly Report on occasions about how many we're getting, because it's easier to explain to them and it's also easier to tailor the answer to them, but certainly there is information about the process, how it works, and that's all hosted on our website.
So following up from that, is there a either staff-driven committee or a council-driven committee where we can speak into demystifying, simplifying the communications on that?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through Acting Mayor, there's no formed committee. We always welcome any comments from the public or staff or our communications team, and from councillors as well, as to where they think things might be confusing or there might be a gap in that information, and we're happy to address that. So that can be directed to myself or the general manager.
Because I have been approached, and maybe you could help comment on this, the ambivalence on this, by multiple people going through the DA process, and they begged and wished they had a checklist that they were given at the time of their inquiry to guide them. How is it possible for these things to be on the form and them not to be aware of it?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it is on the form. Unfortunately, people don't read all the forms, we know that, in lots of disciplines. So there is, information on there about what should be provided, and there's a bit about whether it's commercial. It's very difficult that we can provide everything on there about what you're going to need for your site and your property and your proposal. If you did, the checklist would be so long and it would have so many disclaimers about if relevant, and it's unuseful to people.
Yes.
Certainly for the larger applications who have pre-application meetings, for even for the small applications, we have the likes of a pre-application meeting as well to assist them. And we would expect that their service provider, so if they've employed a planner or a designer, that they are helping them. And unfortunately, it is disappointing that some in the industry don't give them that guidance or awareness of what they should or shouldn't have. And that's really not fair on our residents. And we do our best to try and assist them with what they need to provide.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Nope. So we're now on page 8, questions on notice from councillors. There are 7 questions. The first one being landscape conservation zoning from myself and an officer's response from Ms. Tyler Moore. The second on tourism marketing strategy from Councillor Cordova and an officer's response from Dr. Fox. The third regarding alternative energy precinct from Councillor Midgley and an officer's response from Liz Quinn. The next on pedestrian safety and footpaths from Councillor Cordova and an officer's response from David Reeve. The next being walking tracks from Councillor Cordova and an officer's response from Daniel Smee. The next is on the lighting policy from Councillor Cordova and an officer's response from David Reeve. And the last is on the salmon farm antibiotic use in waters off Kingborough's coast from Councillor Cordova and an officer's response from Liz Quinn. The open session now adjourns and the planning authority commences at 6:07 p.m. We're on page 13, officers' reports to the planning authority. The first one is PSA-2022-3, amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 to update the incorporated documents. There is a recommendation on page 21. Do I have a mover, please?
Got it.
Councillor Midgley. Do I have a seconder? Seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So the purpose of this report is for an amendment to the interim planning scheme to include incorporated documents of...
Point of order. We actually have people from the public still in. Are we in closed session right now?
No.
Okay. I thought you just said a moment ago closed session.
The open session adjourns and the planning authority commences.
Okay, then I misheard. My apologies.
That's okay.
Just wanted to be sure.
We've got a few more hours before our closed session.
Thank you.
To include the incorporated documents of the Kingborough Public Open Space Contribution Policy and the Kingborough Biodiversity Offset Policy. The amendment will update reference to the revised documents to ensure documents are correctly referenced throughout the text in the planning scheme. The proposal will assist in maintaining and managing the region's biodiversity and guidance for application of biodiversity offsets. The recreation and open space will ensure the residential areas, open spaces to other community destinations are provided to meet the demands of the growing community. If Council agrees to initiate this amendment, there will be public consultation as outlined in point 7, the public consultations, and point 8, critical dates and timeframes. The amendment is not introducing new development standards or policies, but rather update list of supplementary documents to ensure they are referenced throughout the text in the planning scheme. It is not a time to debate these important policies. They have been debated thoroughly at other council meetings. It is an administrative process.
Further contributions. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor, and thank you to Councillor Midgley for moving this. It is important to note, I guess, the administrative nature of this move. So essentially, the two referenced policies here being the public open space and the biodiversity offset policy, they were approved in November 2021 and August of 2022, and it was intended to bring those reports to the council meeting but then, of course, we entered a caretaker period, then there was an election, and now we've got a new council. So I think it's important that the community recognises that I, for one, for example, voted against the biodiversity offset policy, and the reason I did that was because I thought the biodiversity offsets should be far larger than they are at the moment, and I feel like we should be protecting the natural environment and not just using that as using financial offsets as an excuse to destroy the natural environment and just, you know, as a cost of doing business, pay an offset. Having said that, this element of the process is really just about referencing those things within the planning scheme. So my concern around the biodiversity offset policy is largely irrelevant because that decision has already been made. It was made previously, and now we're basically just moving this to the relevant authority. So I just wanted to clear that up, that even though I oppose that biodiversity offset policy for those grounds, at this stage I'm very happy to second this motion and support it because it really is an administrative part of the process to help us as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
My contribution is that I think I and a number of us have some questions about it, if we are able to move into that.
Yes, absolutely.
As well.
So you can have questions and then make a contribution after that, or you can wait for other councillors to make their contributions and then give your contribution after that. So if you'd like to start with your questions.
Right, I'll kick off with the questions. Thank you. I suppose the majority of these would go to Ms. Tyler Moore. With regards to point 5.3, the proposed update of the incorporated documents will provide greater certainty for the applicants, assessment officers, as well as the general community. Can you explain how it will do that?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, it's by having a correct reference to the... It's by having the correct year reference on the policy so they can find it on the website.
So currently the policies are referenced in the website. Their date is wrong. Is that correct?
Ms. Tyler Moore. Through you, Mayor, they are in the website. The dates are not wrong. It's that was the last version that was put into the planning scheme. So when you came back to the Chamber for amendment and update, as we do with all our policies, the year has changed, so now we need to reference the updated version.
So can you explain the urgency and why the need to withdraw the 28-day exhibition or consultation period?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I think it's important to understand that urgent amendment is a proper term within the planning scheme, but we're not actually seeking the urgent amendment. I believe there might be a reference to it. We're just using the normal one. Within the provisions of the Act, it does allow a council to apply to dispense the advertising period. So we thought in this instance, because it is just quite simply clerical in terms of reference of the year, because we're not talking about the merit, we can't consider the merit as part of this, there's no real benefit of going out to public exhibition, because what would residents come back to comment about or raise concern about? So it's sort of superfluous to do it in a sense, and it may raise expectations of been able to comment on the merits of those policies. Also, resource-wise, it would be, if it's unnecessary and doesn't offer any benefit, it costs a lot to do the advertising and the resources that go into that, which could be better spent dealing with such things as the LPS, as we know, is afoot. Ultimately, it's the decision of the TPC. If the TPC says we're not using that request or applying that request appropriately, they'll make that decision. The TPC there is to make sure that councils dealing and amending with schemes as per the requirements, so people can rest assured it doesn't get snuck through or anything like that. It'll be ultimately the decision. If they say it needs to be advertised, then we'll proceed with that.
My further question is that what is the disadvantage, apart from some cost, to go ahead with the 28-day procedure?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
The disadvantage is the cost and the resourcing, also the timing. It's just going to delay it getting into the planning scheme. It'll need to come back to the Chamber again. It also could potentially raise expectations about what they're going to do a submission about. Even though we'll talk to people, if they put a submission in, we must report back to Council, and not the greatest use of resource if it's not going to offer a lot for the public to make a comment. But if determined, of course, we will go through the process.
There is a perception in the community that this is directly connected to the LCZ and that people are fearful that any reduction in consultation is promoting an ongoing culture of no consultation over the draft LPS that was lodged. And would it not be in the best interest of community relations for us to go ahead with the 28-day consultation, bite the cost, prove to the public that there's nothing to hide and get over it and start to build some of that lost trust.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'm aware of some comments that have been made about the concern. It's related to the LCZ. It's not related to the LCZ at all. As we are aware from the report, the amendments came through well before the LCZ really became particularly political or of interest or in the public arena as much. Yes, it was occurring in the Huon Valley, not so much here. It's not really related. It's a clerical change, as I mentioned. Should you just do the advertising anyway to regain trust? We could choose to do that. That's fine. But it isn't related, and I think that responsible expenditure and responsible use of our resources is also important to the community, as well as a consultation that's not really serving a particular purpose.
That's all the questions I have for this moment. Any other?
Thank you. Any further questions or contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Just a question. And my question is basically, is it true that if you run a consultation in which the outcome is either predetermined or in which the outcome of the consultation is kind of neither here nor there, kind of irrelevant, does that risk undermining community trust in the process of consultations? And to make that question clear, my understanding of this is that if we were to run a consultation, let's say on the biodiversity offset policy, and somebody writes, you know, I might even make this submission, I don't like the biodiversity offset policy, I want it increased to $10,000 per tree, and then at the end of that consultation process, the council then says, well, we've now submitted this to the TPC anyway, doesn't that scenario risk undermining public trust in the whole purpose of consultations when council offers a consultation and then completely disregards the outcome of the community feedback?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the opinion about trust is probably something that I'm well aware of, obviously. As a statutory role, this is a statutory decision, it would be my personal opinion, but yes, there is a risk that people would write and say, I don't like the policy, it should be more money, it should be less, we shouldn't have it, and we would only have to disappoint and say, sorry, we can't consider that, which it can have an impact that, oh, well, I told council that, they didn't listen, they don't care. That is a risk, but it's up to the councillors to determine whether that would be the case, and be aware that the TPC may still determine that it needs to be advertised anyway.
Any further questions or contributions? No. If there are no further questions, I'll put the motion.
Point of order, sorry.
Apologies. Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Sure, sorry to call you on that one.
Yep. Thank
you for the speakers on the matter. I thought there'd be a few more, but that's okay. It looks like it highlights, I guess, an administrative process. And I just want to retract, I guess, something that I noted in my when I first spoke in regards to the wording that I said. I feel like what I spoke about was the public consultation as outlined in point 7, just not wanting to state that that's determined that is happening. Through the debate, people understand that it is actually not, that it's a dispense as in point 7. But Ms. Tyler Moore, did you want to say anything?
To make it clear for the record and for anyone listening, yes, the comment was made by Councillor Midgley about the advertising reference to section 7. That section is always included in the template because that's what the process is. We outline what the statutory process is, but following that, there are bullet points that say that it would be our intent to request that it be dispensed. But it still is, if the TPC says yes to it, then that's what the process would be.
Great, thank you. So I just wanted to clarify that and put that on record, and noting as well it's not relating to the LCZ, so thank you very much, Ms. Tyler Moore, for that clarification and that.
Okay, so now I'll put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? We have a division, so please raise your hand if you say aye. We have Councillor Fox, Cordova, Dean, Bain, Midgley, and those against, and Glade-Wright. for aye. And for no, we have Councillor Antoli and Councillor Richardson. The motion is carried. We're now on page 25. The next item is DA-2022-43, development application for four multiple dwellings, one existing at 54 Van Maury Road, Margate. There is a recommendation on page 39. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover, please. Come on. Who would like to move this? Councillor Dean, thank you. And a seconder, please. Councillor Antoli, thank you. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, I'm happy to move this. Obviously, I do have a few clarification questions on this, but sure. I'm happy to move the development application here. I note that there's been some significant conditions attached to this development, and so I guess my clarification question here is, given that there are so many, and I'm coming from obviously a very basic level understanding of planning, I don't have a planning degree, are these a standard type level of conditions that we're being asked of this developer for multiple dwelling, similar multiple dwelling units on such a size block with four houses coming on there? If these are standard, and if not, do we carry any risk given the large number of conditions that the developer would walk away?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, these are standard conditions. It's typical you would have a number for a multi-unit development.
Further questions? No. Any other further questions? Councillor Antoli?
No, I don't have any other questions. I'm happy to second the motion. It appears that the developer has acted responsibly in response to our requests for amendment and are willing to put in considerable cost for the pumping and the treatment of stormwater, which appears to be an issue. And my question is that it was noted in this report that Van Maury Road has inadequate stormwater mitigation. And what are we doing about that admission?
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I haven't actually looked at the report to see what area they're specifically talking about in terms of the comment, so I'd probably need a bit more information on that.
Okay. I'm just wondering, is this question relevant to this application?
No. I was only curious to make sure that the developer wasn't putting into this cost to deal with the council's stormwater mitigation rather than this particular block, but I note that the block is quite low set, so it's probably just for the block. I'm comfortable with that, and I do feel it's time to help these people out so someone can find a home.
Okay, thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Cordova, would you like to... Councillor Midgley? Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Cordova.
Thanks for making our decision. So a couple of questions. Page 37 of the report. Actually, no, firstly I'll go to the... I guess I want to state many developments that come to us offer variations of considerations and many varies of representations, I guess, and this report does have a lot of representations in that. One of the anomalies in this one that I haven't come across before as sitting under a planning authority was the retaining wall and garage, the existing garage and wall that we note in the photograph on page 36. If we can just have a bit of an explanation in regards to this, because it does impact, I guess, the decision of the development and the impact of the driveway and things like that.
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the report discusses the retaining wall, which is a shared wall between the two properties. The proposal suggested that they were going to demolish the wall. People may recall that this did come to the Chamber before, but was withdrawn because there was concerns about that wall. Because the application wasn't made for that site, it does affect that site. If you're doing anything on another site, it must be included in the application. That's been rectified. And the they must declare that they've notified the resident of, if they're not the owner, that they have notified them, which they've done. The matter of the actual wall being demolished is a civil matter between them. So you can issue a planning permit, but it doesn't mean that they have to pull down the wall. It doesn't mean the neighbour has to pull down the wall. It's up to them to resolve that. It is possible to issue planning permits that can never be achieved. That's not our responsibility to deal with that, same as we can issue a planning permit. A building permit may never get achieved. So the decision and the recommendation that's put forward isn't in breach of any of that, and it will be up to the developer's taken a risk that they may never get approval to do that, but that's not our jurisdiction or our responsibility.
Thank you. There's a comment regarding the density on page 34, and I just couldn't quite see the officer's response to that. There's also then the width of the driveway. See, it says density is too high. Comment, the issue of density has been addressed in the report. That's the officer's comment, is that correct? So basically the comment from the representor is just density is too high.
Ms. Tyler-Moore. Through you, Acting Mayor, so we've written out all the representatives' concerns, but we've actually already discussed it in the report on page 31. The site area per dwelling is 498, and it was meant to be per 1,000. And there's a justification why it meets the performance criteria written under that table on page 31.
Okay, thank you. The other one, again, the other one sort of relates to Taz Water Infrastructure. And sorry, I didn't write the page on that one. I think it was page 37 again. Sorry, just finding my notes on that one. Sometimes it's handy to have a print and copy. 38, is it? Basically, the Taz Water Infrastructure issues. So when there is a development, and noted in the report, the representations again have said that there has been faulting of some of the Taz Water Infrastructure in this area, but from a recollection that Taz Water has given approval and that everything is going okay, where does that sort of link? Like, because I know that Taz Water Council isn't notified of Taz Water Infrastructure unless it's really substantial and things like that, whereas community members might note that Taz Water Infrastructure is failing. So where's that kind of link in understanding on the ground? People are knowing that it is. So therefore, if there is higher density in that area, it could actually further impact. I guess where's that kind of correlation in there?
Ms. Tyler-Moore. Through you, Acting Mayor, as the statutory body, we're required to refer to Taz Water in certain instances. A number of dwellings triggers the need for the referral. They come back with a response as to whether they think there needs to be an infrastructure upgrade or whether it's adequate. In this instance, they said it's adequate. Aside from the decision of this particular planning application, the comments about the concerns, residents' concerns about Taz Water, isn't generally dealt with through the planning authority. It's either with Taz Water, or quite often it can be done with through engineering services, who obviously work with those authorities as well to raise concerns of failing infrastructure. But it doesn't directly relate to this application. If they've said it's okay, then we have to respect that submission back from them, unless we were also aware of a significant failing of infrastructure in the area.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. To start with some questions, page 34 and then again actually on page, I think it's 85, explains, I'm thinking now about stormwater runoff, clause E7.7.1, page 33, talking about the Stormwater Management Code. Please can we have just a brief explanation about those water tanks for stormwater detention and sedimentation to include receiving pollutants from Van Murray Road itself? Really, the thrust of my question, because we've heard a bit about stormwater so far, the thrust of my question is how can we guarantee that that the stormwater management of this property won't either affect neighbours or affect council stormwater management in the years to come?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the stormwater on-site detention slows down the rate of stormwater getting released into the stormwater system. It's a responsibility of the owners to maintain that going forward. The planning permit, which requires the installation of the stormwater detention, stays with the property forever and a day. So if it is failing, then they are obliged. We could possibly do enforcement if we were to take that action, or at least try and address with them to do that. Ideally, it would be part of their body corporate and they would have a plan where they continuously maintain it. We don't go and do random checks of them because we don't have the resource to do that. It's unrealistic. So we would rely on either the residents of the units, who are likely to be affected if it's failing, to bring it to our attention, or the neighbouring properties, or if we have, if we, as an example, had any concern about the tramway track at the back, then we would go and investigate that and follow that up.
Thank you. Second question through you, Acting Mayor, is about the pattern of development in the area. Were the other developments, multi-dwelling developments in the area, so those listed in the report happen to be number 32, 49, 53, 64 and 66 Van Moy Road, did those developments, to the best of our knowledge, include either the demolition of shared property or the removal or of existing garages or driveways, the removal and replacement of existing garages and driveways?
Ms. Tyler Moore?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I don't have that detail on hand, but I don't know that it has a lot of relevance to the decision that needs to be made for this particular application.
Thank you. And to start my contribution through you, Acting Mayor, the subject site here at Van Moores Road at number 54 is an area that's already experiencing infill and higher density development, including multiple dwellings. And we were, as was mentioned, going to look at this on the 17th and then it was withdrawn. And the application is for four multiple dwellings involving the construction of three new double-storey dwellings to the rear of the existing single-storey dwelling, which is being retained. The existing garage located adjacent to the north side boundary is to be demolished. The garage contains a boundary parapet wall and a boundary retaining wall. The parapet wall is to be removed and the retaining wall is proposed to be kept. There have been four representations made to council about this during the original advertising period and then subsequently two more during the re-advertising, and council's received correspondence regarding the ownership of that wall as well. According to report, the wall has been confirmed as being in the ownership of both properties, as you can read about on page 26. And on page 27, the report reads that we should note, quote, the act of demolishing the shared wall requires the consent of both relevant property owners. The planning approval is not reliant on that consent. It is a matter that the owners will need to resolve prior to undertaking the works. It is a civil matter. And it goes on. I note that the representatives also raised the issues of noise, of views, traffic. However, I think those are all adequately addressed in the report. The issues of overshadowing and loss of privacy present open questions to me, particularly regarding clause 12.4.2, setbacks and building envelope. There's a question in my mind about whether or not this proposal meets performance criteria P3 subclause A4. Quote, the siting and scale of a dwelling must not cause unreasonable loss of amenity by, and this is subclause 4, visual impacts caused by the apparent scale, bulk or proportions of the dwelling when viewed from an adjoining lot, and B, provides separation between dwellings on adjoining lots that is compatible with that of the prevailing in the surrounding area. End quote. So according to the report on page 30, the combined length of the retaining wall is greater than 9 metres, therefore the proposal does not satisfy the acceptable solution, and therefore it's discretionary, it's for us to decide. And so it's an important point here that, contrary to the report, I personally am not of the opinion that this proposal satisfies performance criteria P3. Low-density residential zone, this is now clause 12.4.9, the site area per dwelling is 498 square metres, which would meet the performance criteria if it was A, is not out of character with the pattern of development in the surrounding area, and B, does not result in the unreasonable loss of natural or landscape values, C, does not exceed the capacity for current infrastructure. In my opinion, this proposal does not meet 12.4.9A, because whilst I acknowledge that there are plenty of other multi-unit developments in that area, as to the best of my knowledge, none of those require the demolition or alterations of shared property or shared infrastructure or shared services in order to achieve that development. So the critical point here that I'm trying to ensure that my councillor colleagues are following is that whilst it is true that there's multi-dwelling developments that have happened on Van Moy Road, those multi-unit developments did not require the demolition and replacement of property that belonged to two parties. It didn't. So therefore, this does not meet the pattern of development. It is out of character with the pattern of development that is taking place on Van Mori Road, and therefore it does not meet that performance criteria, and therefore we have the discretion to vote against it, which I will be doing. And I would encourage my council colleagues as well, and I'll take this opportunity to foreshadow that if this motion is lost, I'd like to move a motion to refuse this proposal. The fact is that we have a situation in which the proposal doesn't comply with the planning scheme, it doesn't comply with the acceptable solutions, but also it doesn't comply to the performance criteria, because it is out of character with the pattern of development, it is out of character with those other multi-dwelling developments that have taken place on Van Mori Road. Because it's out of character, because it doesn't meet the pattern of development in the surrounding area, it doesn't comply, and therefore that's why I'll be voting against it, and I'd encourage other councillors to vote against it as well. And I'll foreshadow that motion in the event that it does not pass. Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Councillor Bain and then Councillor Antoli. Councillor Bain.
Thank you. I've just got a question around the stormwater pump system on page 33. Question is this like common practice, way of dealing with the stormwater? Does the ownership of this fall to the body corporate? And what's the process if this pump system malfunctions? Does that come back to council, or is that the body corporate's problem to fix?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, no, it's not common practice. It's not our preference to have pumping stations, but because of the fall of our land and where the reticulated services are, sometimes it's required, and there are a few of those along Van Mori Road. Yes, it's the responsibility of the body corporate if there is one, or if not, it'll be sitting in the common property area and will be the responsibility of all those residents. It can be dealt with themselves to resolve it. If it's brought to council's attention and we think that it's a breach of the requirements of the planning permit, then council can take action to resolve it, but not undertake the works, make them undertake the works.
Councillor Antoli.
So my question is for Ms. Tyler Moore. Given what Councillor Cordova shared about this being out of pattern or out of character for the area, given how difficult it is, I know, for a DA to be approved in this council, and given that no one would ever accuse you of not being meticulous to notice something like this, could you please comment on those assertions?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I would disagree it's difficult to get permits through council because they're nearly all approved. But the comment about pattern of development really more relates to, the term is more about the spacing of houses, the setbacks. So the pattern is how, if they're all single dwellings, it'd be quite different. If the pattern of development was very large houses on small lots, those sorts of are the pattern of development. The demolition of a shared wall is not something we would describe as pattern of development. That's an action of development, not that that is a term of the planning scheme. The pattern of development is more about the appearance, the double-storey, single-storey, space with gardens, space with landscaping and so forth. That's how the term would typically be used.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler Moore. And my comment about difficulty does not mean impossibility.
Thank you. Any further contributions? No, for my own contribution, I'd just like to say that I feel pretty confident that the expert planners have assessed this development application, and indeed there's 15 conditions attached to the development, so I feel pretty confident that there's no issue with passing this. So, Councillor Dean, would you like to sum up?
Look, I just echo those comments, and obviously I want to acknowledge the significant amount of work of the planning staff as well, and those attachments, those conditions attached, I'm also fully supportive and confident that we're getting this right. It's obviously not perfect. There are some situation here that obviously that Councillor Cordova has raised, but I'm still confident in the staff and will be supporting this.
Great, thank you. So I'll put the motion. The recommendation is slightly printed on the screen. It's a long recommendation, so I won't read it out. But all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And no. We have a division. Please raise your hand. We have Councillor Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson and Gladewright. And the noes are Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. Okay, the Planning Authority now adjourns and the open session recommences at 6:40 p.m. We're on page 88. Petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. Petitions received in the last period. At the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions have been received. We're now turning to the officers' reports. The next item, donations policy 3.3, is being withdrawn from tonight's meeting, and it'll come back likely at the next meeting, and we'll be able to discuss it then. We're now on page 95. We're on WasteWise events policy. There is a recommendation on page 96. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. It's my great pleasure to move this motion. I, at the outset, want to thank the enormous amount of work that staff do in this space and thank the author and the authoriser. We have had a WasteWise events policy for some time, since the 22nd of May 2020 was when we first adopted it. And essentially this is for all council-supported events and all public events held on council-owned or managed property. So there's a vast array of a lot of amazing events that happen in the municipality, and it's really important that we encourage really positive behavioural change when it comes to reducing waste, and that helps us achieve our climate targets, but it also helps us achieve a more clean and green municipality, so it's a good thing all around. Over the past 2 years, the policy and guidelines have been accepted by event organisers with minimal non-compliance and have assisted with education and waste reduction at events. Every now and again, you know, I do notice, I remember at the basketball one time, people were handing out single-use plastics and things like that, and I think it was raised by Councillor Midgley, and there's moments like that where it really is a learning experience. It's an opportunity for education, and it's an opportunity for the community to share in that behavioural change. So the essentially what we're looking at here is the updated policy. It's inclusive of all council run events that are organised both by council and those that are organised by the public. Essentially there are no identified risks associated with adopting this revised document, and it's good to see that the WasteWise events policy has largely been incorporated into many of the regular events that happen throughout Kingborough. So I commend the motion to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. It is an important policy because it acknowledges Council's commitment to working with the community to transition to a low-carbon lifestyle, and we all know the importance of reducing waste to landfill. We get our slides about the waste presentation. We'll all thoroughly understand that. So just the update of the policy includes minor amendments, deleting of local suppliers on compostable packaging, which notes it falls quickly out of date, and the WasteWise events brochure is attached, and as noted, that is given to the people that Councillor Cordova outlined. Just a couple of questions from me. So private bookings for hall hires, so they don't have to have this WasteWise events guide. Am I correct in that? And have we thought about perhaps leaving it in our halls or things like that just to sort of promote what people could actually do?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, you are correct, Councillor Midgley. It doesn't apply to private bookings for hall hire, and it's not something we thought about.
Thank you. I guess just to again promote that transition to a low carbon lifestyle and promote how to be waste wise, or could be maybe a thing to consider. So grant events and activities, I guess, that are funded by council. So I don't know, say for example the Middleton Fair, that might receive a grant from council. Does it fall under that? It seems a bit grey to me as well.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I'd need to check the community grant policy to see if that references this particular WasteWise policy. But yes, you make a good point. If we're supporting events through grants, then the WasteWise policy should apply.
Thank you. FOGO bins. So I have attended a number of events at the Hub, and there is no, or there has not been a FOGO bin, noting that the policy states that this WasteWise management, I guess, falls to the organiser's expense. What's the go with FOGO?
I believe they've got one there now. Last time I spoke with Mel Staples, actually, over there, she told me that there was one there, but I'm not sure. Mr. Smead, do you want to answer that? Or Mr. Reeve?
Through your acting mayor, we certainly have got the interchangeable lids for the different bins there that are available for people to get off council. So that allows it to either be photo or garbage or recycling or whatever it happens to be. So that's certainly available for anyone who's running events. They just need to contact council.
Thank you. So I guess it would be the same then if there was a council public event at our halls. I don't know how many halls of ours have FOGO bins either, so I think it's a fantastic policy and very important, but then it goes those systems down to ensure that we have especially FOGO bins in place at different venues would be good for people to know. And the only other thing, when I kind of read this, I have done a lot of events and actually did a school event on Friday and ended up taking a lot of the garbage home. People might think that's a bit strange, but anyway, the compostable packaging home to put in my FOGO bin at home, because many schools do not have FOGO bins. But what could be interesting to put or to do a story alongside it is some stories of good waste management would be good to know. Again, that inspiration for when you're organising an event, actually some real life stories of how people have managed it could be perhaps give some people some more compliance and what to do and things like that, because we do note that at events often, like I know when the City of Hobart, when they had the taste and they implemented FOGO or other sort of packaging, they actually had to have waste kind of warriors going around to make sure people were putting things in the right bins. So I guess some stories of things in real life could be interesting as well.
Any further contributions? No, I'd just like to say I think that we should be really proud of this policy. It's a really great thing, and it's really warming to hear that a lot of our events are already running their events and keeping this policy in mind. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Acting Mayor. A good discussion. And to sum up, over the past 2 years, this policy and the guidelines associated with it have been widely accepted, and I'm pleased to see that there's been minimal non-compliance. But as was raised throughout the discussion tonight, that because there's no compliance or enforcement necessarily associated with that, it's something that I think all of us in the community need to be alert to. So if you're going to an event, try and encourage really positive, waste-positive behaviours. You know, reduce, avoid waste in the first place is even better than reducing it. And the policy itself, as we've talked about, has some minor amendments. For example, the deleting of local suppliers of compostable packaging, because that information is updated so regularly. But those suppliers will instead be listed on the WasteWise events brochure, which is available on the council website and distributed to all event organisers. And ultimately, the purpose of having a WasteWise events policy is to make Kingborough a nicer place. It's to make it a more sustainable place, and it's to make it a place where we all can prosper, not at the expense of the environment. So I really strongly encourage people to get involved, learn more about it. There's lots of information on the council website, and I commend the WasteWise policy to the council. Thank you.
Thank you. The recommendation is printed there on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And no. No, the motion is carried. Okay, turning now to page 112, Kingborough Positive Ageing Policy. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Antoli, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. The objective of the policy is to ensure that those who are of the wisdom spectrum in our community are given direction to council's activities in relation to supporting them. We do have quite an ageing population in the Kingborough Council. It is, as I understand it, one of the... it's one of the older populations in the Greater Hobart area reside in Kingborough. When I first moved here in 2015... it was actually dominant, the dominant demographic. It has actually been rapidly changing since then. All the more reason to support them in a changing demographic, lest they be forgotten. The changes are minor, and so I commend it to the council for quick approval.
Thank you. Any further contributions? Councillor Cordova, then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Question about clause 5.1.5 on page 117. It reads, support where possible the provision of appropriate and affordable accommodation options. My question is, please elaborate on what appropriate and affordable, what does that clause actually mean in practice? What are some examples of where that provision is invoked in practice in Kingborough?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. The statement is, to a degree, aspirational. There is only a limited amount of influence that council can have in this space. However, we do advocate strongly to the state government, and we do that through the city deal, for investment in affordable housing across the board. We do provide advice to developers in relation to how their developments can support the needs of older residents. And, of course, we provide the Kingborough Volunteer Program that enables older residents to stay in their own home for longer. So, you know, whilst we do have limited influence, there are some tangible areas in which council does work in this space.
Thank you. That makes sense. And Councillor Fox is also telling me about Bruny Island as well, which is really interesting. My follow-up to that question is really, could this policy be considered, or rather, is this policy being considered as part of our council's report into the effects of whole dwelling short stay accommodation on the rental affordability crisis in Kingborough? So we, I think in September or October, we passed this motion about getting a report into the effect on the rental affordability crisis of whole dwelling short stay accommodation. Is this part of the positive ageing policy being taken into account for that report?
Is that...
Sorry, through you, Mayor. I just need the question again. I was just doing some work.
That's okay. Through you, Acting Mayor, the positive ageing policy explicitly says that support, where possible, the provision of appropriate and affordable accommodation options. And my question is, are we actually taking that provision of this policy into account for our report on the impacts of whole dwelling short stay accommodation on the rental affordability crisis? Do we see linkages there?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we can certainly put it on the list for things to consider because it is a factor in that field and those concerns.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yep. Thank you. Through you, Acting Mayor, just to conclude my contribution, is that the positive ageing policy, I think, is a real asset to our suite of policies in Kingborough. It's critically important, as Councillor Antoli rightly points out. We do have an ageing population, and we, as a result of that, have a positive ageing plan for the Kingborough Council, and it applies to all people aged over 55 who live, work and visit Kingborough, and it aims to provide opportunities for growth and development for all older people. It acknowledges that the community of older people here in Kingborough is diverse, and it's important that we try to link in these programs and initiatives and policies that support seniors in our community so that people feel included, people feel consulted, and people feel that, quite rightly, the councillors do have the residents of Kingborough at the heart of everything we do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further of Councillor Midgley, sorry.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Yes, agree with the speakers that this is an important policy, and as people get to know local government, there's many policies for many community groups, so it's great that we have this one for Kingborough. Sometimes councils look at social inclusion policies to sometimes look at, I guess it's not really grouping and leaving people out, but I guess then councils don't have to continue to kind of update all these separate policies and they can keep track of things under one umbrella. That's just some way that other councils are looking at. I had a question also in regards to what can council do realistically regarding the affordable accommodation option. So good to know we think similar, Councillor Cordova. And I did send those questions to staff earlier, so great to hear the response on that one. I did also ask about the Access and Advisory Committee if they did review the policy, but I was given information by Dr. Fox, but as it is a minor amendment, they did not, but with the original strategy that was in 2018, am I correct with that, that there was thorough community consultation and engagement regarding that. That just gives me a point, though. The strategy, the positive ageing plan, is that the one clarification, Acting Mayor? Just wondering, is that the name for it? The Kingborough Positive Ageing Plan or
policy.
The strategy? No, there's a strategy that this sits. So the policy sits above or sits sort of
strategy.
Entwined with the strategy. The name of it. Is it the Kingborough Positive Ageing Strategy?
Strategy.
Yes. So noting that was in 2018 and we're heading into 2023, was the strategy for how many years? 10 years? 5 years?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor. So the strategy has been a rolling strategy. It was first done in 2008 and then it's been reviewed every 5 years since.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, so 5 years would be 2023. So then the policy is going to be for 5 years, and if we update the strategy, then we'll just update the policy and we'll just kind of continue like that.
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I think it's important to note that the policy is very much a statement by Council of our support for the principle of positive ageing, and all of the aspects that are listed in the policy that are included. The strategy is very much about the procedure and the actions that we're going to do. So I don't think this policy has changed much since it was first formulated in 2008 when we had a positive ageing committee. And I remember in 2010 that committee was very keen to see Council have a specific positive ageing policy that was a really clear statement of Council's support for this sector of the community. So I don't see the need to renew the policy at the same time as we renew the strategy. I think the policy is just very much a statement of Council's commitment, and the strategy are the actions that we're going to do to actually fulfil that policy commitment.
Any further contributions or questions? No, Councillor Antoli, would you like to sum up?
I'll sum up very quickly because I think we need it. Thank you for the contributions, and I think this is an important thing for us to all support and get behind, lest our grandparents visit us in the night.
Thank you. I'll now put the motion as printed on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Antoli and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
No. The motion is carried. We're now on page 119, Southern Tasmanian Regional Waste Authority, appointment of forum representative. Do I move it first or do we move? Can someone move to discuss, please? Moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox, would you like to start the discussion?
Yes, I think this is an opportunity for us to make an appointment of a forum representative who will then be eligible to go on the board, and also a substitute representative who would be able to attend if the formal representative is not able to do so. And I think it's very important that we are part of this. Council's always had a very strong role in this area, and I think we should continue to do so. I would like to ask if it's possible for Mr. Reeve to have perhaps fill us in on the actual role of this board and Council's role in the past with it.
Unfortunately, Mr. Reeve has declared a conflict of interest in this. Oh, wrong one. Sorry. Oh, you can still talk?
He said he would like to stay so he could answer questions.
Oh, right. Okay. My apologies. So, Mr. Reeve, and I suppose we will be calling for nominations after we've heard from Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, just to clarify that point there, the reason why I actually declared an interest is A, that I'm actually part of the steering committee that's actually putting together the prelims for the board at the moment, and also I'm a potential candidate for the position as well. However, that the questions that I'll answer will not be about me, it will be about the particular report. So in terms of what we're actually trying to achieve here is we're attempting to put forward a representative in particular, because they will be the person that will form the forum's representative group along with the other 11 councils, and they will have a role of meeting maybe two or three times per year just to get some information back from the board as to how things are actually progressing, but they'll also have a role at this very early stage there in terms of actually electing two of their own members to actually serve on that board. So the substitute representative, really the only role for that one is to come along as an observer, but also to fill in if the representative is unable to actually attend a particular meeting. So it's probably very much the very first meeting, which is going to be the most important meeting in terms of actually working out between that group there which two people would then go forward as board members, as, if you like, the chief representative and the deputy chief representative. There will also be three independent board members. So there's a process that's actually happening at the moment through a private recruitment company there to look at both the CEO for this society and also the independent board members. So that's sort of the role of the of what we're trying to put forward. The only other thing I'd probably add to that is that I don't necessarily have a vested interest in this, but what I do have a vested interest in is that whoever council elects to put forward has an interest in this space, because I think it's important that if we're going to go to that forum, whether we get onto that board or not get onto that board there, it's important that we have got that interest in that space as compared to saying that I'd rather just serve on a board type of thing. In terms of the actual Southern Authority and how that fits in, there is the Tasmanian State Board at the moment. They'll be responsible for delivering a lot of the state-wide waste objectives. They'll be collecting the levies that we're being putting on and looking at projects across the state, but they will actually have the three regional groups. This is one of them, and there's two up in the north that represent the regional areas. So some of the actions coming from the statewide board will come down to the regional groups there, but the regional groups will also have some of their own actions as well that feed into that larger statewide picture. So it's going to be a busy time over the next couple of years or so in terms of work in this space. So I think that's a pretty general summary, but if there's any particular questions, I'm happy to answer those.
So, Mr. Reeve, are you suggesting that you be appointed as one of these representatives, or you will already be attending those meetings?
Through you, Acting Mayor, my only role at the moment is being part of the steering group in terms of setting up the board, only because there is no board in place to actually do that, and obviously setting up some of the policies and organising for the CEO and all those prelims that actually come with this need to be done. So that's my only role at the moment. It's now up to council to decide who they want to actually put forward as the representatives from Kingborough Council for both the rep and the substitute rep.
Okay, but are you expressing your interest in being appointed?
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, I can fulfil that role only because of my role that I actually have in the waste space at Kingborough Council.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to
have further questions, because it is discussion.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. So I just wanted to note that it is an important board with the introduction of the waste levy, and I really hope that the people who are appointed to the board hold this board to be appointed to account. so that actually the flow-throughs do come down to local government and that all this money isn't spent on board stuff and talking about a lot of things. I want to see action. So hopefully whoever gets appointed to the board can hold that to account. I just want to make that statement because I am a tiny bit dubious. It's important we have it, but a tiny bit dubious about this whole waste authority role. The meeting minutes of this Waste Authority Board, will they come to council meetings? And if there is, say, particular decisions, I personally have an interest in this area, but I'm not going to put myself forward, how, I guess, will any consultation happen with councillors regarding any decisions that are made at the board? Will the minutes come to council meetings and so on and so forth?
Mr Reeve.
Yeah, through your acting mayor, yeah, certainly there is a role for the forum there to actually be, which is made up of the council representatives there, to be informed on this. There's also ability for minutes and so forth there to come through our normal council agendas as well, so there's information on there, and there's certainly that ability for any councillor to ask any question as regards anything that may be on those minutes there, to actually then take that back by that board there for any queries as needed.
Are there further discussion points before we call for nominations? Councillor Antoli.
Yes, I have a point of clarification. So, Mr Reeves, so my understanding is this is to nominate to a forum. That forum will then decide or basically supervise the appointment of the directors. It is those directors that then, according to 5.1, are remunerated. Is that correct?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. Yes, that's correct. So tonight we're not actually voting on someone to be a board member. We're voting on someone to be a forum rep and a substitute rep. And it will be up to then the forum, which, as I said, will only have 12 people. The substitute doesn't get to vote on this, as to decide who will be the two council reps. The other reps, the independent reps, all the prelim work will be done on that, but it'll also be then up to that forum to decide on the other independent reps as well.
So my follow-up question, if I may,
sure.
Acting Mayor, is that once this body is set up, could you give some practical examples of the sort of problems that they would solve for this council?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So it's not unusual to actually have regional groups there. They've had one in the north and the northwest for a long period of time. So they deal, and in the absence of a statewide body, they've been dealing with all the issues that you might associate with a collective group of councils as compared to an individual council. So a lot of this is, for example, where Dulverton, which is a regional waste transfer group, came out of some of these processes. So some of the things we'll probably be looking at via that board will be regionalised type programs there. We've got programs like the garage sale program. We've got programs like home composting. We've got programs that are associated with waste minimisation. It is a little bit unclear at this stage as to where the regional body will actually take control and where the statewide body will take control. For example, one of the big things out there at the moment will be things like banning of single-use plastics. That is more likely to be a statewide body action. And until some of these bodies are actually fully established there, we're not going to quite know, but we would think that they certainly, well, not think, we know they will work in harmony with each other, and it'll be a question of actually saying the big picture stuff there for the statewide body, and then there'll be other stuff there that you want to have consistent across all three regions. So it's not completely clear at the moment exactly how that will actually work. Certainly from a funding perspective, the question's been asked as to what each regional body will need in the early days of funding. So some of the things that we put forward is some of those things I've just mentioned there as programs, but also to fund the board as well. So at the moment there, council has an allocation in their own budgets to part fund the board. So we will be hoping that this statewide board will have this ongoing funding commitment for each of the regional bodies there, so individual councils don't need to wear that cost.
Would our council lose any autonomy to this new body once formed?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Acting Mayor. No, I don't see it as losing any autonomy. I see it as the ability to actually look at things on a more of a regional basis and a statewide basis. It's a process that's been in the past with the regional bodies there, and they have worked on some of those regional processes. The big difference is there was no real money behind it. Now with the waste levy, there is actually some money that actually goes behind this, which gives a lot more opportunity to actually pursue some of these regional initiatives there and actually get them off the ground. So it's certainly not intended to have individual councils where whatever the regional body or the statewide body was going to be doing was going to be in conflict with the waste management strategies, for example, that councils would have. You'd see that they would actually all flow together. And I guess if you talk to people in the waste space there, you'll realise that most people are on the same wavelength in terms of what they're actually trying to achieve across that space there, which is all about minimising waste, encouraging more people to actually recycle, encouraging more people to home compost and so forth.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. I think, as has already been said, this is a very important role. Both the representative and the substitute representative will be a very important role in promoting best practice for waste avoidance and reduction, resource recovery and the circular economy. And as has been alluded to, it's a very dynamic time in the waste space with the waste levy, the container refund deposit scheme, other initiatives aimed at reducing and avoiding waste as well as appropriately valuing waste, trying to avoid waste in the first place and trying to see the true value in the waste that is being accumulated to minimise the use of the reckless use of landfill. I will be putting my name forward, and I think that since I'm already a proxy on the Copping Refuse Site Joint Disposal Authority and Copping CCL, I think there's a synergy that exists there. I do note that Mr. Reeve, I think, would be an excellent choice as well, and so I do recommend that whilst we discussing this, either as the representative or the substitute representative, I think it would serve us well to have a real expert there in the room on our behalf, but I will certainly be putting my name forward, and I think that synergy that exists with Copping CCL and my role there would make me an appropriate candidate, and that's why I'll be putting my name forward. Thank you.
Are there any other nominations? Councillor Antoli,
I would like to nominate as the substitute rep, but not the main rep.
Okay, any other nominations?
I would like to nominate Mr. Reeve as the representative, as council's representative, with his experience and knowledge and background and connections. I think it's vital that he is in that position. Thank you.
And are there any further nominations? No. So our Mayor, Councillor Reet, has indicated that she is very keen to be nominated. So that will be in the mix when we vote. And I'm also quite interested in nominating. So that gives us 1, 2, 3, 4 to choose from the representative. And how does that work?
On how that works in regards to, is everybody nominating for the representative or the proxy?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I think councillors need to make a decision in relation to the rep first of all,
okay,
and make a decision as to whether you want that to be a staff member, and certainly from a staff perspective there is only one staff member who has the appropriate expertise to do that, and that's Mr. Reeve. So I think we're in discussion at the moment, so standing orders have been suspended. So if there's consensus that the council's rep is Mr. Reeve, then we can agree on that and then vote on the substitute. However, there can be a councillor nominated for both of these positions if you so wish.
Is everyone okay with that proposition, or Councillor Cordova, would you like to make a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Acting Mayor. I think that whilst I agree certainly that Mr. Reeve is absolutely qualified, but I also think that Mr. Reeve would serve well as both. So if you're the substitute, you're already in the room and you can advise, obviously, the person who's actually making the vote. So the only thing that matters in the room is what that vote is, and obviously you've got an expert in the room by your side helping you make the vote. So even though there's that one vote that you get, and maybe Mr. Eve would like to comment, if that's, is there a diminished utility through you acting mayor? Is there diminished utility in Mr. Eve being either the substitute or the main deputy?
Mr. Eve.
Through you acting mayor, yes, it's quite a difficult conversation for me to have. Look, I think it's, first of all, I might just say, I think it's wonderful that actually there's a lot of people around the room who are willing to put their hand up there. Certainly that's what I've actually put in the report there, and certainly it's been expressed by the steering group as well at the same time as what they would like to see is people that have an interest in this space. So I think that's actually fantastic. It doesn't, while we're in this session here, it doesn't really bother me one way or the other, provided we actually get the right people in the room for it. Yes, take the point there that you, at most of the meetings, hopefully you'll have both the forum rep and the substitute rep there, and generally you'd be hoping that both of them will actually discuss and hopefully have the same viewpoints in terms of the vote, and depending on what is actually happening at the time there, whether or not there's any need for council to actually provide input as well at the same time. I'd be happy either way, as long as we actually have got people who are dedicated to actually taking on that role there and actually making a difference in that role too.
I have a question.
Yes, Councillor Fox.
The person who is the representative, are they the only person out of these two that can actually be elected to the board?
Mr. Eve.
Through you, Acting Mayor, yes, that's correct.
So I think what we're going to do is we're going to have two votes. We're first going to vote on the rep, and the nominations for that are Councillor Cordova, Mr. Reeve, Mayor Reet, and Councillor Gladewright. We'll do that first, and then after that we'll have a vote on the substitute and we'll work out who's in that mix after we've done the first vote.
Sorry, Acting Mayor, before we do that, so I think it's a really important bit of information that, and it's something I didn't realise when I made the comments earlier, that ultimately if we're angling to get Mr. Reeve onto that board, which I think is not a bad thing to be angling for, then we really do need Mr. Reeve as the council's representative on this authority. So my suggestion would actually be that if we can, as a consensus, if we can all agree to that now, then we would only have to do a vote on the substitute, which I think would be more preferable.
Okay. Is everyone happy with that? That's why I was going to call a vote, just to determine.
Can you clarify, please, Mr. Reeve, the forum members eventually end up on the board, or the forum members are the steering committee who choose the directors, the board?
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor, it's the latter. So not all forum members will actually end up on the board. There are only 2 out of the 12 will actually end up on the board.
Correct, right. So there's a bit of a strong inference that the forum members will end up being on the board. And that's not granted. That's not definite.
All right, so we're all in agreement, Zoe, that we're going to nominate Mr. Reeve as the representative. Correct? Okay. And now we're going to vote on the substitute. Mr. Smee is going to hand out some ballot material, and the nominations are Antoli, Cordova, Reet and Gladewright. And I'll have one too, please, Mr. Smee. Thank you.
While we're in discussion, the apologies that the mayor is not here, that she can't vote for herself.
Oh. We have ordered some pizzas, so we will be having a short dinner break. We'll just finish this item and then we'll go and do that.
Councillor Cordova.
Okay, so we're back on the substantive, which is printed on the screen there. Yes, so I'm calling for a mover and a seconder. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Bain. The recommendation is that Council endorses Mr Reeve as Council's representative on the Southern Tasmanian Regional Waste Authority and Councillor Cordova as Council's substitute representative on the Southern Tasmanian Regional Waste Authority.
I just have one quick question.
Yes.
How long is the term for?
Mr Reeve.
I believe it's 3 years.
Do we need to add that into this motion?
No, you won't need to add it into that. I'll take that back, actually. I think it's silent on terms of the forum rep. So by all means, if you want to put a time frame on, that's fine. The actual membership of the board is 3 years.
Could I propose that we make it in alignment to our other committees? I think that's only fair then for other councillors if they wish to be on the board. And would that be too much of a muck-up if, say, it was changed in between the period?
Given that it's only the substitute that would change after 2 years?
Just for the substitute?
That's...
Okay, so do we need to add in the 2 years?
I would not support that because I think it's important that we have continuity and that we... This is a separate process to a council committee. It's something that's outside of council, really. It's a regional committee. I don't think we can set the terms for that. I think the regional committee sets the terms and we're just providing the input to that.
Okay, so this may need to be moved as an amendment to... be voted on. So did you want to move an amendment, Councillor Midgley, to introduce the time frame?
So could I ask a point of clarification to mm-hmm. help Councillor Midgley maybe on that? Mr Reeve, does this forum exist and continue after the actual body and board have been chosen?
Mr Reeve.
Through the Acting Mayor, yes it does, so it'll be always in place.
Always in place,
And I guess that's the reason why I'm saying there's not really a time frame associated with the forum, because I guess Council could put forward forum reps at any time they wish to. The only thing would be that if you had a forum rep who then became a board member, they'd be tied to that time frame of being a board member. But apart from that, if you needed to change that, and obviously one of those changes would be at a council election time, so automatically you'd be looking at actually probably reviewing that after a council election.
A substitute representative wouldn't be elected to the board though, correct? So that wouldn't...
Yeah, through your acting mayor, the substitute representative, yes, so you could set what time frame you wish for that. That's not really so much of an issue.
I think that's what Councillor Midgley is intending, just the 2 years, just for the substitute representative who wouldn't be on the board.
Yeah. The only issue you will get into is if the representative is no longer available, in which case the substitute representative is then deemed to be the representative. It would just mean that you would need a further report to Council there to clarify that.
Okay, so Councillor Midgley, do you wish to go ahead with the amendment? No, we'll drop that? Okay. All right, so the recommendation is that, as I previously said, all those in favour, please say aye. Aye. Against? The motion is carried. Okay, we're going to adjourn now for a 15-minute supper break, and we'll be back here at 7:40.
Chair.
try that again. Welcome back, everybody. We need to just begin by confirming that the audio recording is on.
Confirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Smee. So we're now on page 148. The next item is the appointment of members to council special committees. There is a recommendation on page 149. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I recommend this motion. It's wonderful to see so many people putting their hands up for these special committees in their community, being part of the community and contributing significantly to the management of their local areas. I don't think there are any people who have nominated who haven't been included in this list. It's good that there's no competition, basically, that we have to make any controversial decisions. But they're all... I just recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Are there further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a quick point and also echo the sentiments of Councillor Fox in regards to the thank you to the many members of the community who sit on these committees and keep council up to date with information and governance, I guess, of the halls. Just a quick question around this is, and I have had emails from some committee members around upgrades and things like that to the halls regarding maintenance. And what is the committee's processes in regards to budget matters, if the committee wants to put forward budget matters and things like that?
It's just me.
Through you, Acting Mayor, the terms of reference and operating procedures for these committees indicate that they are to provide council with their wish list, in effect, and they are to do that by the 31st of December each year, so that we can then get it into our capital bid list for next financial year. And I know... an email has been sent to committees asking them or reminding them of that fact.
Thank you. I cannot recall this wish list being seen in budget workshops. If possible, that would be great to have a look at the wish list.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, I have to say that we historically haven't got a lot back from our hall management committees, and you won't see it as a wish list, but you will see it in the list of projects that are included in the capital program, some above the line, some below the line. So they're certainly in there, but they don't appear necessarily as a wish list. And generally speaking, the projects have been determined in consultation with staff. Generally speaking, we know what the upgrading requirements are for our various halls. We do have a strategy. We have had them audited. So we're normally pretty well aligned in terms of what council staff see as a priority and what the committee want to see. But occasionally there are something that comes from left field, and we take that on board.
Councillor Antoli.
Just two questions, please. The Bruny Island Community Centre Management Committee, the community centre, is that the one in Alona where the medical facility is behind the hall?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that is correct. It's the Alona Hall that...
It's the hall itself.
It's the hall that fronts the oval,
gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha. It's not the medical centre behind, because that would be a state one. Okay. And where, if you can tell me, the North Bruny one is located?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Acting Mayor, that's the Dens Point Hall.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know where that is. Thank you.
Any further contributions? No. If not, then I'll put the motion as printed up there on the screen, or also printed on page 149. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And no. No, the motion is carried. We're now on page 151, the financial report for October 2022. There's a recommendation on page 152, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. So at 16.6, we have the financial report as at the 31st of October, so we're one-third of the way through the financial year. The original budget had council forecasting a $21,000 surplus, and as of the 31st of October, this has decreased by $100,000 to see us now forecasting a $79,000 deficit. Some of the reasons for the decline are the statutory fees and fines are under budgeted by $132,000, and that's mainly due to planning applications being less than expected. Other income is $144,000 under budget, and that's largely due to the loss of the state government contract for Bruny Island. And employee costs are $46,000 over budget, and that's primarily due to the annual leave provisions being over budget, but that's expected to be corrected over the summer period when employees take their annual leave. The decline is offset by rates, which are over budget by $200,000, and that's due to the supplementary rates from March 2022 being paid in September and October. These were delayed due to the revaluation of properties. Interest income is $142,000 over budget, and this is due to recent increases in interest rates producing additional income. A question I do have is, in the report it mentions the move to a deficit, highlighting the impact of inflationary pressures on the council budget. So I'd be interested to know if we're seeing particular areas and items where we're seeing the overspends resulting from that rise in inflation.
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Acting Mayor. Look, essentially, at this stage, we've had a couple of substantial increases, and they're mainly noted in the report. Land tax was the big one, $200,000 increase, which is a 60% increase on what we were paying before, and that was just a result of increased values of the properties that council owns across the municipality. I've also seen fuel. Fuel costs are looking at being well over budget, around perhaps up to about $150,000 for the year. And the other one that we're seeing at this stage is some IT contracts. So anything that's got seems to have a contract in it are getting sort of 8% to 9% increases, which is a fair bit more than we expected. The big unknown at this stage is our road maintenance services. So some of that will be inflationary impacted, and some will be things like natural impacts, such as the current amount of flooding and water damage we've had to particularly our unsealed roads are having quite an impact. But yeah, we're certainly seeing inflationary impacts across the board. Hopefully we'll see some of the revenue increases offset that, but at this stage it's looking a little bit doubtful that we'll get an underlying surplus.
Further contributions, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Acting Mayor. Just a couple of questions. First of all, I guess I'm seeking just a bit more of an elaboration on 8.1 risk. The result for October is around the budget expectations. We've just heard about the inflationary environment and some of the concerns there. But it does say it does not represent a significant financial risk to council. In what term is that statement covering us for? Does that mean for the next 3 months it doesn't represent a significant financial risk, or does that mean, you know, in the long term we're still actually sitting fairly well?
Mr. Breen, sorry.
Yeah, through Acting Mayor. Essentially, I guess you've got to see council as a $50 million organisation. So for us to come up with a deficit that may be $100,000, $150,000, it's pretty insignificant in regards to an organisation of this size. What we need to do is be looking forward at the 10-year program, which we'll have a look at when we do the long-term financial plan, and that's where you've got to start seeing some surpluses coming into play and therefore building up your cash reserves. So that's really the more important issue. I think the short-term inflationary impacts over a year is not particularly significant.
Councillor Cordova.
And through you, Acting Mayor, just a follow-up question is actually about our finance more broadly. I believe, and I'm trying to find it now, I believe that we've actually passed a provision either in the long-term financial plan or somewhere else, I can't see it in there, about not using banking institutions, financial institutions that invest in fossil fuels. So essentially it was, I believe, tantamount to a divestment from financial institutions that still have fossil fuels in their investment portfolios. Is there any update on that? Just because I'm conscious that we've got, you know, some 22 3.3, council's cash and investments amount to $23.4 million at the end of the month. That's obviously offset by $22.3 million in borrowings. But anyway, the question is really about, are we doing the fossil fuel divestment thing?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through your acting mayor. I can't specifically recall. I know we had some discussions when we had a look at the investment policy around that particular aspect. I don't think the outcome was that we were making those specific changes. I think it was something that was put on notice that we need to have a look at for the next policy, which comes up in, I think it's about 12 months' time.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Well, I guess just on that, it is. I'm aware that Hobart City Council has done that in 2017, and I do see that in our Treasury Management Policy, it says under 5.15 sustainability risk, council gives preference to fossil fuel free authorised deposit taking institutions when making deposits if the rate of return is greater or equal, da 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 da. And if the So I think we do have some provision there for sustainability, but it would be interesting to see, as we're having these financial discussions, it'd be interesting to keep that on the agenda and make sure we follow through with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley. Thank you. Just one quick question. Have we received any revenue from the housing sales at Kingston Park? Mr. Breen.
Through you, Mayor. So essentially what we're doing, we're selling the land at Kingston Park. So at this stage, we have received funds for the first stages of Kingston Park, Stage 1, 2 and 3. We haven't, so they're only now just starting to be occupied. So we would be starting very shortly to get some supplementary rates coming through from those properties. So I'm not certain whether it's arrived yet, but if it hasn't started, it wouldn't be far away.
Any further questions or contributions? All right, just on that question I asked, whereabouts in the table on page 171 can we see that income from the land sales at Kingston Park? Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, sorry. So essentially this is the expenditure for Kingston Park. So this is not a report that does the income and expenditure. The income we received last financial year, so it won't appear in this financial year's figures at all. So it was just a revenue, well, it wasn't a revenue item, it was a land sale item for last financial year.
Further questions? No, if not, then I'll put the motion. The recommendation is printed on the screen. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And no, the ayes have it. Page 172 now, notices of motion. At the time the agenda was compiled, no notices of motion had been received. Page 172, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. That in accordance with Regulations 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority move into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence, consideration of amended plans for planning application DA 2021-548, acquisition of land for road widening, Browns Road, Kingston, Kingborough Bowls Club loan, Taruna Bowls and Community Club loan, tender assessment AB 2218 Garnett Street, tender assessment AB 2219 Jamala Road, Stage 2 reconstruction, and the rates delegated authority. All those in favour, please say aye. And against, the ayes have it. So this draws us to the end of the open session. So I'd like to thank those who have attended those in the public gallery have already left. But thank you to all those who are watching along at home via YouTube. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recording Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.